Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donatio, and today my guest is Edie Nathan, who is the author of the newly released It's Grief, The Dance of Self-Discovery Through Trauma and Loss. She is a licensed psychotherapist with over 20 years of experience specializing in the integration of psychotherapy and spirituality. Edie holds a master's from New York University and Fordham University. She has postgraduate training from Ackerman Institute for Family Therapy, the Gestalt Center, and the Jungian Institute. She is a certified EMDR practitioner, regression therapist, and certified hypnotherapist. For two seasons, she was the psychotherapist on the show Psychic Kids, Children of the Paranormal on A&E Television. Edie blends her formal training as a psychotherapist with her insights on trauma, abuse, and death. She believes that all experiences, are forms of grief, and throughout our lives, we will all experience these various forms, and that grief is not just about the death or the loss of a loved one, but the losses we experience in work, friends, health, family, finances, and even our purpose in life. Edie is trained with renowned past life therapist regressionist Brian Weiss, MD, author of Many Lives, Many Masters, and Hank Wesselman, PhD, a shamanic healer and author. Using her many skills, she facilitates people in coping and learning to live with and processing through their grief. Edie, I'm so pleased to have you on the show. We had such a wonderful pre-interview, and I walked away with it with just so many new thoughts and ideas about grief. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Georgiana. It is wonderful to meet you again later in the day and be able to share the same way that we were sharing before. So
absolutely,
it's great to be here.
You have, as all of my guests do, you have a story, and a story that can help inform each of us how we can process through this this thing called grief. It's really funny because since I spoke to you, I had this like wallop of grief that came into my life. It's not funny, but sometime today around 2:30 this afternoon, it was like, whoa. And I said, look, this can't be a coincidence that we're doing an interview on grief, and this wallop, this absolute like blindsided wallop of grief just hit me. So for me, this is a deeply meaningful and wonderful conversation that we're having. And I know the listeners are going to absolutely love it because you are wise and kind and insightful and compassionate. So let's start. For you, when we started talking, it began. As a child, you said that, as a child, you were very interested in psychology and that kind of thing because you had a very interesting experience within your family. So you want to start us at your family and how that began for you, within the dynamics of your particular family of origin?
Absolutely. We are all born with a certain magic. I called my magic my little Buddha. I probably didn't name it that then, but I name it now in reference to that time. And I was born with this little Buddha, this sense of knowing, this sense of understanding that just was part of my intuition, part of just a body felt sense of the world and relationships. So it was a family of origin that had lots of love. And of course, as with any family, there are ups and there are downs. But this little Buddha that was in me was experienced by my family, probably that I was more of an outlier, and that's not a bad thing. It's just, I was a little bit different. And that difference, And the realization that I needed to quiet the little Buddha, I needed to not be so aggressive or loud or argumentative because what I was seeing just didn't jive with me, meant that I had to put little Buddha away. And the reaction of doing that was probably an internal agitation or depression or anxiety. But now, as I look back, it was a grief. It was a letting go of. And I've re-met that Buddha within me, and Buddha is as, stronger than ever, or it's really that sense of self. And I call it my Buddha, but everybody's got their magic, and the magic is holding on to the self and knowing the self, owning the self. And actually, just getting this book out, as you and I discussed earlier, to be willing to put a book out and to have your peers like it or not, and be willing to take that, to understand that you are putting yourself out there in a big way. And it takes a certain level of, I'm going to be okay no matter what, and I need to get this message out. So it's taking the risk and being a risk taker. So the early losses actually informed the ability now to take the risks so necessary. So in that respect, when I talk about grief being a gift, and in grief there are gifts, that was one of the gifts that those early losses actually helped to frame me in very positive ways later in life.
Mm-hmm. So your first real encounter with loss came from what you called being an outlier. You didn't feel like you were part of the tribe necessarily. You didn't feel that you were deeply part of that tribe in the sense that you couldn't be wholly yourself. You couldn't be seen. You couldn't be heard. You couldn't walk into a room and be totally comfortable that you were known and you were unconditionally loved. And that's, that's kind of a tough thing for any kid. And unfortunately, so many go through that. But that was the tip of the iceberg, wasn't it? That was just...
Sure, it was. Absolutely. Yeah, that was the intro. But I'm happy that I had that intro. And no matter what, I always knew I was loved. I always knew I was loved, even if I couldn't fit into the, I was a square peg and I wanted to fit into the round hole, but it just wasn't going to happen. And knowing that, it took a long time to get more comfortable with being the square peg. With that said, life moves on, and certainly I see grief in so many different perspectives, and my life has kind of been about grief, from having been bullied to being overweight to having dealt with anxiety and then losing my first love when I was 27 years old. And all of those losses were of such magnitude, yet each of them were experienced differently by me. But the loss of my love when I was 27 changed the entire trajectory of my life.
Yes, and so let's drill down into that, because that's quite a story. Actually, it starts off Hallmark movie romantic, and then winds up deeply, deeply sad. So take us to the party where you met Paul, okay?
I was at a party. I was with a girlfriend, and Paul walks into the room, and I was actually living with someone else. So, this happens, and I was struck immediately by the presence of Paul. And we often have those moments, and you and I talked about that earlier, where it's just it's a soul to soul moment. And I said, oh, I'm in trouble. I need to stay away from this man. I'm in another relationship. I really can't do this right now. I can't do this, period. And I said, I'm going to stay away from him. And I live in New York City. Now, New York City, in terms of square footage, is not a huge city, and yet it's large. It's a city of strangers. In any event, the next day I'm walking in the city. I've said I'm going to stay far away from this guy, and I'm walking on 34th Street and Fifth Avenue, and who do I bump into but Paul? And there
now,
he is.
Now, we have
like,
to
okay,
stop for a second here,
it.
Okay, because come on, people.
I know.
I mean, there's no way, that somebody is going to say, oh, that was a coincidence, right?
You know,
because
you're right.
This is New York City. There are 12 million people in New York City. And you, the next day, having vowed to yourself that you were going to stay away from this man, well, the universe had a different idea, didn't it?
Yeah, it certainly did, because we were in Brooklyn the night before. And I didn't know that I was going to be in the city, and he was going. He was an actor. He was going on an audition. And in that moment, we went and had a cup of coffee, and we talked for hours, and very long story short, just realized I had to end my relationship that I was currently in, and proceeded to have a relationship and partnership with Paul. And that partnership lasted until he died, and that was almost 2 years. And the first year, we were moving in and out of his traveling and my working and going to school. And the second year, he was dying. So we had a year of health, and we had a year of his dying and his leave-taking. I would say that it was that deathing, his dying, was perhaps some of the most intimate moments that I've ever had in my life, to be allowed to sit with someone you adore, hold their hand, and they take you into their world of leaving this world.
Wow.
And he did it with generosity and love, and was concerned about me and how I was going to kind of move ahead and grow from this. And we talked about it, and we were very open about his death and what he wanted, and ultimately what he chose to do was to, knowing that it would probably kill him, was to go on to an experimental drug for the sake of science. And that's how he chose to die, because he knew that it was probably going to kill him, but he wanted them to try to figure out lung cancer. And that was his choice. And very brave. And his death, and the way that his death was shared with me, really changed everything. I was going to go work in the corporate world and be a trainer, and all of a sudden I said, nope, I'm going back to school, I'm going to become a therapist, and I'm going to figure out how I can help other people be in their grief. And then I started to redefine grief. It's not just about the loss of a loved one. We're being hit by it all the time. And that's when I went back to Little Buddha and said, wow, I lost Little Buddha. And when people are bullied, or when they're, you know, hiding in their trauma, they've been traumatized, sexually traumatized, physically, verbally abused. When they've been a caretaker and they lose the role of caretaker, these are all places where grief can land.
Yes, absolutely. And we see it, those of us who are in healthcare see it probably a little more, but all you have to do is pick up the newspaper and look around you.
Of
and
course, there's environmental grief. Absolutely.
Is it me, or does it seem, Edie, that there's an escalation of the amount of grief that's in our culture at this point? I mean, there's so much going on. I mean, all of the shootings and all of the, you know, occurrences and the fires and the earthquakes and the volcanoes. And it just seems that things are speeding up, even the amount of grief and loss that we're seeing. I mean, you're a therapist. You work in this, so you must be watching it happening at a more rapid rate.
I'm not sure if it's happening more, or if because of the way we get information now, we get information from around the world quickly, and we have the internet, and we have Instagram and Twitter, and information is coming at us very, very quickly. And is it that more things are happening, or is it that the coverage is so much more expedient, and we're hearing what is going on across our nation and around the world, and therefore we know more, we're hearing more. And of course, you know, we think about these shootings, and we think about the early Columbine, and now we think of, you know, the Parkland in Florida and the nightclub in Orlando and so many of these deaths. What happens, that this dying and the danger that we feel that we're in can actually make something that is within us yet to be resolved, or maybe has not yet awakened, can awaken something in us. Mm-hmm. And that is something that grief actually does. It is an awakening, and it can actually awaken you to things that have been dormant or put away or secreted away. And all of a sudden, you can't hide it anymore. You can't mask it anymore. You're actually awake to it. It's a trigger.
It does seem, though, that the incidents are far more close together, you know, where you have a weekly disaster or a daily disaster on CNN. You know, it's like, don't turn the news on, you know, literally.
And I agree with you. Yes.
You know, you go to turn the news on, and I literally say to myself, okay, what happened today? And and it's kind of shocking, but there's so many other things to talk about. First of all, the book, one of your mentors, Dr. Brian, he wrote an amazing book. Brian Weiss wrote an amazing book called Only Love Is Real. And in there, he talks about soulmates united. The reunited, the reason I'm bringing this up, Edie, is because so many losses that we have in our life very often are soul connections. And it appears, and we want your feedback about this, that a lot of the grief and loss in terms of relationships in our life are coming from these soul connections that we're finishing up or acting out or attempting to try again. As a matter of fact, in his book, he talks about there are two ways that can happen. You know, one can be that things work out, and the other thing is that the other person doesn't recognize you, and they simply move on and leave you behind. Do you want to comment about that?
You know, the soul, that soul relationship that Brian talks about, he really says it best. You know, there are going to be people who you feel you recognize, and it's on a soul level. It's those aha moments. It's someone who becomes a really good friend, and you don't even know how it happened. And yes, it's probably from some time before this life. You know, if you believe that. And if you don't believe that, that's okay. It doesn't mean that there isn't some kind of soul knowing, oh, I recognize this person. There is something about them that I see in myself. So I like to expand the conversation. I happen to love the way that Brian puts it, that there are going to be souls that we meet that we recognize, and that we want to continue knowing them and sharing, and we can, and it happens. And then there are other times when perhaps something within us is yet to be resolved. It's not resolved. And as a result of that, we really can't forge ahead in that soul relationship, even though we recognize it. Like, we're not ready. And we have to honor what we're ready for and what we're not ready for. And that can also cause a grief reaction, what you're ready for and what you're not ready for. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to meet that person in another form, at another time, even later in life.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly. And that's what's so interesting when you hear these stories, you know, about high school sweethearts reuniting, you know, and all of this other stuff. It's kind of fun. You were sharing, and I think this is so important. After Paul died, we were talking. I asked the question. I said, "How did you cope with it? How did you get over it? I mean, how did you work through it?" Mm-hmm. And you talked about the wild woman. You said you had to, you know, you really had to find a way to move at least distraction towards distraction and away from the overwhelming grief that you felt. Tell us about that time and tell us about the choice you made 10 months later, because that's kind of an important, I think, piece in talking about how we cope with grief.
So this, I want to just remind everybody, I was pretty young at the time, and though I tried to find people to help me navigate through the loss, it was really hard. So I was navigating through this loss by myself and scared, anxious. And what I found is I started to, you know, not sleep and maybe drink a little bit more than I needed to be drinking, overeat. My self-care just really went down the drain. What I ended up doing is finding another mate about 10 months after Paul had died. And I got married, and I loved my husband. But I had not really resolved my own internal yearnings, and it is often a very tricky place to be in, to navigate loss and to want to be in life and to not want to feel the grief. And what I was really able to do was kind of shape-shift, move from the person who was grieving into I'm going to be in this role of wife, and my husband was raising two girls, and I'm going to get involved with them and their lives. And I fell in love with the idea of being in a family. And we were a family, and we created this family. Yet my grief, though it was there, was hidden, and I was not paying attention to it. And what I've learned is that when you don't pay attention to grief, it starts to rear its ugly head. It starts to come up, and it does not want to shut down. It doesn't want to shut up, and it just keeps gnawing and grabbing, and its tentacles are far-reaching into the brain, into the psyche, into the soul, into every part of the body and the mind and the heart. And I finally had to wake up one day and say, okay, this is not working. This is not working. And we both agreed, you know, to come to an end. And though there was grief at the ending of that relationship, I still hadn't dealt with my grief and my loss from Paul. And I needed to really deal with that, walk it, integrate it before I could move on. And I went into a little bit of a wild woman after my divorce and started dating and getting to know me. And that is one of the most important pieces. Grief teaches you to learn about yourself. It asks you, it begs you to take yourself on. Because if you don't take yourself on, it's always going to be there, like nudging you, like really knocking you. I have a magnet on my refrigerator, and it's like a box. And in the box, there's a knock. And whenever you press a button, there's a knock, and it says, "Let me out of here. Let me out of here." And grief that is not heard from within the self, ends up being imprisoned, and that's not good.
And there's a Russian expression that the pain which has no vent in tears will make other organs weep, meaning when we cannot discharge and look at and feel and process our emotions, it's going to come out somewhere in the body, or it's going to come out somewhere in the mind.
That's
and
right.
The quote that you gave that I loved is, you said, "I see grief as taking a leap of faith. You need to be a bit of a fool to enter into the journey of grief, not knowing where it will take you." I can't believe we've kind of gone past the first commercial break, but we're going to take a break now. First of all, your voice is so wonderful, and it's just so inviting into processing this incredible information. So thank you so much. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, And we're going to continue this conversation with Edie Nathan. So don't go anywhere, anyone. And Edie, when we come back, we're going to continue on your path, okay?
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donatio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donatio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donatio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donatio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available on both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
And we are back with Edie Nathan, who is the author of a newly released book called It's Grief: The Dance of Self-Discovery Through Trauma and Loss. Edie is a licensed psychotherapist with many years' experience, and she's integrated psychotherapy and spirituality. And she has much to share with us about grief and loss. And before the break, I was sharing a quote that Edie, told me during the pre-interview. So I'm going to ask you now that we're back. You said you see grief as a leap of faith. And you said, you kind of have to be a little bit, foolish or desperate or brave or whatever, to enter into the journey of grief, because we don't know where it's going to take us. So can you talk about that for listeners who are on their journey in the middle of grief? What is it we have to do? What does this journey ask of us to get to the other side?
The leap of faith and being a fool is not knowing what the journey is going to be, and that you are going to meet a parts of yourself that have either been hidden or dormant. And what grief does is it actually awakens you. And the leap of faith is saying, I don't know what's ahead of me. I don't know what this is going to look like. I don't know what it's going to be like to go into the depths of what I call the 11 phases of grief. I don't know what it's going to be like when I'm numb, or when I'm feeling despair or depressed or fearful or enraged. I don't know how to forgive. And it is taking a leap of faith that even if you don't know, it is in being willing to be in discovery, to be curious and not know what the outcome is. That is the leap of faith. And it takes a little bit of the fool who is brave, who is smart, who actually knows that they are on some kind of path, but they don't exactly know where it's going to land them, to be on this journey. And so that's what, you take a leap of faith, be a little bit of a fool. It's actually a metaphor. It's not that this journey is foolish. It's actually that this journey may be the most important journey of your life.
Well, it requires so much courage. And you and I talked about Star Wars and that wonderful scene where Luke Skywalker is asked by Yoda to go into this cave. He's supposed to go, walk into the forest and go through the cave, and he's supposed to find himself. And, Luke Skywalker goes in, and he finds Darth Vader, and he cuts his head off, and then he takes the helmet off, and he finds himself. So it seems that whether it's, mythical stories that we're talking about, or Star Wars that we're talking about, or things of this nature, there is this understanding that the only way out is through. And
yes.
So when you're working with a client who is going through grief, what are those stages that you talk about and that you walk them through and facilitate them getting to the end of?
So I'm really glad that you mentioned stages, because I actually have moved away from the idea of a stage and have introduced the idea of a phase. And the reason that I've switched it into a conversation around the phases is I see a stage as being finite. It's like a beginning, middle, and an end, whereas the phases have more movement. And I move in between all the different phases so that you can be layered. And I really discuss the 11 phases of grief. And that first phase of numbness, despair, hysteria, it's actually a phase that we need. It calms us. It gives us distance. It might get us even more involved in the depths of the grief. And the other phases, there is no one order. There's role confusion. There's anger. There's forgiveness. There's grace. There's sadness. And you, As someone who is in their mourning cycle, will experience some of these, all of them, maybe only one. It is not for me to tell you you're going to grieve in any prescribed manner. It's as individual as you are. It's like your fingerprint. So you're going to move through these phases the way you want to move through these phases. And what I suggest to people is you read through them, you go to the one that you really speaks to you, and you stay with it. And if others speak to you, great. And what you will find is you're going to dance between all of them.
Yes, I can imagine. I imagine it's not one size fits all, to be sure. And you deal with people who have grief over many things. It can be the loss of job, the loss of esteem, the loss of community, the loss of physical health, impairment. There are so many things that we can lose. Is the grief any different for someone who is going through losing their ability to walk, or losing the person that they love so dearly, like their child? Is grief different for different circumstances, or is grief pretty much a universal experience?
When we talk about grief and we think about, well, what does it mean to grieve? Everyone, if you mention the word grief, everyone has an idea of what that is. So in that respect, it's universal. How one goes through it, moves through it, heals with it, is going to be as individual as they are. So no one's going to grieve the exact same way. No one's going to heal. And, healing is an integration. It's not like it just knocks it out and says, okay, you're done, it's over, you're never going to feel this again. That's not what we're talking about here. We're actually talking about how are you going to walk with your grief so that it doesn't interrupt you from living the best life you can. And if you lose a child, is there going to be a hole in your heart? Sure, there is. What are you going to do about it? Becomes the different conversation. So, for example, the woman, Candace Leitner, who started Mothers Against Drunk Driving, MAD, her daughter was killed after having, been hit by a drunk driver. Well, that, Candace took the loss of her daughter, and she changed the lives of many by starting MAD. And that's what I'm talking about. Some people will take their grief and manifest it in ways that will teach others how to have a voice around it rather than being silent. While other people will quietly deal with it, and that's fine. And other people will go into the depths and the darkness and never come out. And they're all choices that we make. There's no right or wrong, but I would hope for my clients and for anyone who's listening that you don't want to be in the darkness. You want to get back into living. And my mom died 10 years ago, and I was left some jewelry of hers. And when I wear her jewelry, I feel like I'm taking her and showing her the world, and I love it. And she's with me. And do I miss her? Yes, every single day. There's not a day that goes by that I don't think about her. But I show the world to her through the light of what she loved, which was her jewelry. And I would want people to have those conversations. How can I teach people about being a caretaker? And maybe there is relief when who you've been caring for has passed or has now been hospitalized, and therefore your role is gone. Yes, you're grieving your role, but there also can be relief. And to understand that loss, grief, is complex. It is complex by its very nature. No one grieves the same way.
Absolutely. You said something very profound, and it was a very generous sharing on your part. Because I asked you, you married twice after Paul, and I said, did you recover, from your grief from Paul? And what you said was really beautiful. You said, I don't, it's still part of me. I haven't stopped grieving. I probably never will, but it's different. You process it, and you embrace it, and you accept it, and then you change it and transform it, but it never leaves you.
That's right.
And I think that's an especially important message, because people can also feel very guilty. You know, I don't have to. We all know the stories about people who won't go out again. They won't marry again when they lose someone very, very young. People who will never be happy again because, you know, someone dies or something happens, and they just can't accept that they can go on when such a terrible thing has occurred. So I think what you were sharing with me about embracing, if you could talk about that, I mean, if you could talk about, like, how do you say to someone, how do you invite someone to actually say, I'm going to identify it. I'm going to say, this is what has happened, and this is what I need to look at, to face, to accept, and to embrace. How do you invite someone into that? That's quite a process.
You know, I it's interesting. When I work with someone, I'm asking them to take themselves on and to learn how to be alone with themselves and to learn how to be in the empty moments so that those empty moments are no longer filled with fear. And learning how to tolerate the silences, the losses, the intensity of the emotions actually helps them to integrate, to know, okay, you know what? I'm going to repattern my thinking. I'm going to do this differently. I'm not going to walk around with a black armband. I'm actually going to walk around and I'm going to challenge my thinking around my grief and around my mourning. I can do it this way. I can wear this mask and make everybody think I'm okay, but meanwhile, I'm not. I'm really in pain. Or I can actually let some people who I trust into my real world, not my fake world, not my masked world, and say, I'm in pain and I'm hurting. By owning the pain, you actually reduce it. By sharing it, speaking to it, not being in silence with it, oh, it expands. You expand. And by expanding, you're actually changing the brain and you're changing the way that grief is in the brain so that it's not taking you down. It's actually, you've got a balanced relationship with it. And you find joy and you find laughter, and there's not guilt or embarrassment that even though you are going through this grief, that you're laughing or that you've taken a break from it. You are not your grief. Grief is a part of your life experience. And that is what I like to bring home to my clients. You know, grief is not a choice, but it does have you go deep within the inner core of your soul. And it demands an awakening, a meeting of the truest self.
Mm. You talked about longing. And you talked about the mask. And yeah. I went into your book, and you have in your book on page 47 a quote calling masking, under the title of Masking the Self. And it reads, "We wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts, we smile." That is, I don't think there's a human being alive that can't relate to that. And I think that that is so much a part of what grief does and what it is for us. And if we're hiding anything, if we're wearing a mask about anything, we're going to experience grief. Because isn't not being authentic and being ourselves and being seen and being heard, isn't that in itself a terrible grief?
So, of course, absolutely. It's the hiding of the self.
We're going to take another break because I ran over, so now I can't run over this one. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a very important thing that you discussed, yearning. You said, be on the lookout for yearning. that you have in your life for yourself, to be yourself. So when we come back, let's talk about the red flag of yearning and how we can identify that and help resolve the grief that we have that we may even have masked from ourselves by working through yearning. Don't go away, anybody. We're going to be right back.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
And we are back again with Edie Nathan, who is the author of a wonderful book called It's Grief, The Dance of Self-Discovery Through Trauma and Loss. Edie, before the break, we were talking about longing. I don't know. I mean, have you met anyone who has never had longing in their life? I don't know if I have.
No, I haven't, to be honest with you. No.
So let's talk about that phenomena, because longing, as you shared, is connected to resolving grief and taking a look at what is it we're grieving very often. You know, what are we missing? What are we longing to fulfill?
The yearning and the longing is, I guess, how I define grief, is what are you yearning for? What are you longing for? What are you missing? And when I work with groups, I'll just have a group on yearning, and we start to really break down what is yearning, what are you yearning for, how do you want to be seen, where does your grief play into the yearning? Resolving yearning can, you know, if you can't resolve it, and resolve resolve. What I mean by resolve, and what I don't know if you mean this, but it's not about ending it. It's about how to make it less potent and powerful so it's overrunning your life. You don't want the yearning to just take place of everything, because then you're always wanting, you're hungry, and you're never feeling full. And
right.
This is about how do you feel full? How do you feel more engaged with just a sense of I'm okay, I'm balanced, I've got this sense of calibration within myself. And that is the goal, is this calibration, this sense of balance, this sense that I'm okay. I can move with whatever I get kind of hit with. And when you're in a perpetual state of yearning, you don't react well to the things that hit you, the big G's, and like the loss of a job. You don't have any flexibility around your grief, or the little G's, which are just the little things in life that happen that make us disappointed. So yearning is so it's so important to hear it. And when we talk about yearning, and it feels like I can't help myself, I don't know what to do, I don't know how to feel better. Sometimes, and you and I spoke about this, it takes going outside of yourself, doing service, helping others, getting outside of your own brain, even when you don't want to, even when it's hard to move yourself outside of the house, to offer help, to give some money to someone who's homeless, to make a phone call to a friend and reach out and just say, hey, I wanted to say hello, I haven't heard from you in a while. It is this reaching out, it is service that can often help the yearning. And there are other tools around this. Meditation can often help yearning. Learning to breathe and getting in touch with breath and saying, wow, I've got my breath. And breath can actually calm the self. And though it may not remedy what you're yearning for, it might actually give you other ideas, other ways of being with the self that can replace or quiet the yearning.
Oh, that is so important to hear, because a lot of times what happens is we get so internalized after grief, after any kind of loss or disappointment, and we're just thinking about our feelings and what's going on for us. And yet when we stop and we externalize, as a matter of fact, that's one of the exercises that people are given for anxiety, is to externalize and to put the focus outside of ourselves and to serve other people, or to be there for other people, or to be grateful for what we do have as opposed to what we don't have. So filling up the hole, it seems, Edie, is about shifting one's perspective, yes?
Yes, yes. It is the repatterning. And we have more information now about the brain than we've ever had. We never believed that the brain could actually form like new pathways. And now it's a scientific term, but not to be afraid of, neuroplasticity. Mm-hmm. And this neuroplasticity, it's that our brains are plastic and that we are actually able to take the old pathways, the anxiety, the grief, and form new pathways. And these new pathways, they can help us deal with anxiety, depression in very different ways by the way we think, by challenging our cognitions, which only means our thoughts. So changing a negative cognition into a positive cognition. And I talk about that in the book, It's Grief, that part of allowing grief to shift within you is to also learn to change your cognitions. And it takes work, it takes perseverance, but aren't you worth it? Aren't you worth that work and that perseverance to change the negative thinking into the positive thinking, and thereby starting to change those neural pathways, those connections?
Well, we're going to have to do the work one way or the other. We can suffer, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can suffer and not do the work, and it'll just keep popping up for us. Or we can do the work and we can process that way. One of the things that you do is you integrate spirituality, and I think that this is so important because we've talked about souls, we've talked about, you know, all of these wonderful esoteric things. You had Thomas More as your mentor. You've been surrounded by very spiritual people. What we really understand, and I think you said this in your book, it's pretty hard to talk about grief and not talk about spirituality. It's pretty hard to look at something as profound and big and large and the teacher of grief and not look at spirituality, the bigger meaning. What does it all mean? What is it all about? So do you want to speak to that? There was another quote that you gave me that was about grief. And I thought it was, it was pretty great. You said, grief can be one of life's greatest teachers to take a stand, find a voice, and find the undiscovered self. And boy, if that doesn't sound spiritual to me. So do you want to make a comment about that?
Well, we're always in discovery. And what grief and the mourning process does is it is an awakening. And this awakening can be spiritual. It can certainly be very much part of your soul. And what is the soul? It is all the mechanisms within us that respond, that feel, that engage. It is our core. It is our center. And certainly, this is spiritual in its very nature. The idea of how we reckon with birthing, with the birth process, and with death and dying, and that we, throughout our lives, we experience little deaths, and we experience bigger deaths, and those I call them deathings, they happen throughout our lives. And I discuss this in the book, you know, leaving the mother's side, you know, and kind of going off on your own is a kind of death. It's like I'm moving on. And yet it is a certain strength and potency of that child to say, I'm ready to disengage, I'm ready to move, I'm ready to take those first steps. And it informs our being, the very nature of the self when we make those steps. So I think of life as a spiritual, it's always a spiritual journey.
Terrific. Well said. Now, Edie, how can people find you? Where can they get your book? Of course, can be found probably just about everywhere, right?
It will be everywhere. Right now, the best place to get it is on my website, edienathan.com.
Okay, so edienathan.com. The name of the book is It's Grief, The Dance of Self-Discovery Through Trauma and Loss. Edie, you have been just a fantastic guest. Thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you. It was a pleasure.
Listeners, come back again next week when we will have another inspiring, moving, and informational program on living above the drama.